Yudches Hamid Beis, the bottom line of the page.
34, right? That's what I mean. Probably.
Okay, the Gemara starts a new piece of Gemara concerning Bikurim again, which are the first fruits that you have to bring to the Beis HaMikdash. You have to put them down. You have to say some parts of the Torah, and basically they go to the Kohanim. And the din is, if a non-Kohen eats Bikurim, it's capital punishment by Hashem. So the question is, when is the fruit considered Bikurim, that if a non-Kohen eats it, he's Chayiv Misa, that he gets death?
When what does Bikurim mean?
Bikurim is the first fruits. The first fruits of the field you bring to the Beis HaMikdash. Rav Barada said the name of Rav Yitzchok. Top of the page. When are you chayiv for eating bikurim? Meaning, when do they receive the kedusha of bikurim, that if a non-kohen eats it, they get killed? So it says, Mishayiru pnei abayis. Once they see the Beis HaMikdash. Meaning, as soon as they enter the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, they're already holy. You don't even have to put them down. You don't even have to read. The second they enter into the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, they're automatically bikurim, that if a non-Kohen eats it, they get killed. So the Gemara says, Kaman, which opinion does he hold like? So he says, Ki hai Tana, like this Tana, the Tanya, there's a braisa that says this following. Rabbi Eliezer says, Bikurim, miksasim bachutz, miksasim bifnim. What happens if you bring a basket of bikurim, half of it inside the Beis HaMikdash, and half of it outside of the Beis HaMikdash? So it really didn't go in completely into the Beis HaMikdash yet. So he says, Shebachutz, the part that's outside, harein kuchulin l'chol devreihem, has absolutely no din of hegdish. It has a din like regular fruits, and therefore for non-Kohen eats it, it doesn't matter. Shebifnim, the half that's inside the Beis HaMikdash, top of Yutes. Mamish, the top line. A few lines down, I mean. Shebifnim, the part of the Bikurim that's inside, harehen kehagdish chol devreihem. They have a din like hagdish. What do you see from there? That as soon as you bring the Bikurim into the temple, they already become Bikurim. Which was the din of what Rava Bar Ada said in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak, that as soon as Bikurim come into the Beis HaMikdash, they get the sanctity of Bikurim, and therefore if a non-Kohen eats it, he gets killed. Okay? Where do you see that? Because he says if half the basket's inside the Beis HaMikdash, and half the basket of fruit is outside the Beis HaMikdash, what's inside is inside, what's outside is outside. So the Gemara says now, Amar Rav Sheish is a new din of Bikurim. We had this Gemara before, these few lines, but the Gemara is elaborating on it. Amar Rav Sheshe says, Bikurim hanoch ma'akeves bohem, the placement before the Mizbeach is essential. Kriya ein ma'akeves bohem. Kriya, the reading of the Psukim, remember we learned already this Gemara a few pages ago. When you bring Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash, the Torah says you bring him in, you put him down in front of the Mizbeach, and then you have to read Psukim. Okay? So the Gemara says, what is the vital part of the Bikurim? Is it the bringing and the reading, or is it just the bringing? So Rav Sheshe says, it's the bringing and putting it down in front of the Mizbeach, that is what makes it Bikurim. And then you did your obligation. Even if you didn't read, which you're supposed to, your obligation, the mitzvah was done.
But what if it was first fruits, and you brought it into the Mizbeach, and you put it down
next to the Mizbeach?
Or whatever, I mean, then that's supposed to know.
Yeah, the Kohen was there with you. It was a system. The Kohen was there.
I just can't understand why the Kohanim have to eat the first fruits first. Why them?
Because Kohanim weren't given a share in the land of Israel. Kohanim made a living from working for God.
Oh.
So they didn't have land to grow things in.
So they were really
holy.
Holy, holier than holy.
Well, they're a priest. The Kohen's not
That's it, man. Okay. So the Gemara says, Kaman, who does he hold like? Ki hai Tana, he holds like this Tana. He's going to prove from a Braisa that the main primary thing by Bikurim is bringing it and putting it next to the Mizbeach, even if you didn't read any of the Psukim. Why? So it says as follows. Now, let me just give a brief introduction to this coming up Gemara. During the time of the Beis HaMikdash, there were a lot of obligations to do. You had to bring sacrifices. You had to bring Bikurim. You had to bring Meiser, you know, the tithing. You had to bring it up and eat it in Yerushalayim. You had all these dinim that were connected to the Beis HaMikdash.
You know it's not in Yerushalayim.
Huh?
You know it's not in Yerushalayim. You know it's in Crown
Heights. Right.
Yeah.
That's a given. That's a given. It's so given, the Gemara doesn't even have to say it.
That's right.
Right. Now.
So what's going to happen?
I'll tell you later. Now that there's no Beis HaMikdash, the question is, do certain dinim still apply? For instance, we know there's a din of Meiser. Even today in Eretz Yisrael, you have to separate Meiser. Do you have to bring it to Yerushalayim? Can you bring it to Yerushalayim? Do you have to bring it to Yerushalayim? Well, now that there's no Beis HaMikdash, so how do these dinim all function, basically? And the Gemara is going to discuss this a little bit now, because we have to understand what obligations exist today now that there's no Beis HaMikdash. Okay? So he says as follows. Rabbi Yasi said, Shleisha Devarim, he said three things, three halachas, Mishum Shleisha Skenim in the name of three elders. He doesn't say who the elders are, but he said three dinim in the name of the three elders. What is the din? He said in the name of Rabbi Shmuel the following. I would think that a person is allowed to bring his Maisa Sheni to Yerushalayim nowadays. And to eat it there, even though nowadays there is no Beis HaMikdash. But I would think that you have to do it like it was in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. And he says, Vidinhu, you can even logically learn this out. Why? Because b'char tornavoy smokim, the firstborn animal, not firstborn fruits, firstborn animal was a carbon that you have to bring to the Beis HaMikdash. If a guy had a farm and his cow, gave birth to a firstborn calf, you have to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. You have to bring it on the Mizbeach and the Kohen ate it. Okay, so he says b'char tornavoy smokim, b'char has to be brought to the Beis HaMikdash. Like it says in Chumash, you have to bring the firstborn animals to the Beis HaMikdash. And by Ma'aseh Sheni, the Torah also says you have to bring it to Yerushalayim. Because in the olden times, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, what did they do with Ma'aseh Sheni? They brought it to Yerushalayim and they ate it there. So it says, Ma Bechor Eina Lebifnei Abayis, just like a Bechor can only be brought and eaten in Yerushalayim when? In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, af Ma'aseh Eina Lebifnei Abayis. That means Ma'aseh could be eaten in Yerushalayim only when there's a Beis HaMikdash and not nowadays. So the Gemara wants to learn out, because the question is, can you take a Bechor and eat it in Yerushalayim today? No. There's no Beis HaMikdash. You can't bring it as a carbon. You can't eat it. The same thing, Ma'aseh Sheini, you can't eat today in Yerushalayim, he says. What you really have to do is, you have to redeem it, and then you can do with the money whatever you want.
What do you mean redeem it? Sell it?
Well, you could technically redeem it for less than its value. There's a din that Hegdish, holy things that are based on Migdash, the Gemara says, worth $100 that you redeem for a penny is redeemed. In other words, it wasn't a monetary value. There was a concept, you had to redeem it to make it unholy. Because like this, it was holy. So how do you make it unholy? You have to redeem it. So you can redeem it for any amount. No, today not. You have to let it graze until it becomes... I'm talking about Maisa you redeem. The b'chor, you have to let it wait until it gets a blemish. And then you can shecht it and eat it. Because it loses its sanctity.
That's what you were talking about last week about the...
Yeah, they put in the pans with the... Yeah, but which you're not supposed to do, but that's what they do. But once it gets a blemish, it loses its sanctity. Because it's not fit anymore for the Mizbeah, because it has a blemish. So then you'll be able to shecht it. Ma'aseh Sheni, you can't bring it to your shlaim to eat it. What you have to do is redeem it. And once you redeem it, then it's edible wherever you want.
But you keep it.
Yeah. Maisa Sheni, even at the time of the Beis Hamikdash, belonged to the person who brought it.
Rabbi.
One second. The only thing you had to do was you were limited where you eat it, but it's yours. Oh, oh. You have to eat it in Yerushalayim.
It wasn't. Don't you have to give some of it?
Not Maisa Sheni. One tithe, regular Maisa, went to the Levies.
Right.
Some, when a Levy got 10%, he had to take 10% of the 10% and give it to the Kohen.
Right.
Okay. But the Maisa Sheni, and there's another time Maisa Ani had to give to poor people. Sometimes Maisa Sheni was, it was yours, you had to separate 10%, you had to eat it only in Yerushalayim. If it was too much to carry to Yerushalayim, the Torah says you have to redeem it for money, take the money to Yerushalayim, and spend the money there on food. So now the Gemara says, can you eat Maisa Sheni today in Yerushalayim? So the Gemara says, I would think that you could. So he says, no, because they'll take a Bechor, the firstborn animal, you have to take to Yerushalayim, but that only applied in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Now there's no Beis HaMikdash, so you can't eat the Bechor in Yerushalayim. So we liken Maisa Sheni to Bechor, and therefore just like Bechor you can't eat in Yerushalayim, Maisa Sheni you also can't eat in Yerushalayim. You have to redeem it.
Rabbi, just so as I understand you, what I always thought the Beis HaMikdash was just a big shul.
What?
I'm ignorant.
No,
what
no.
can I tell you?
Beis HaMikdash was a place where they had altars and they brought... In fact, they didn't daven too much in the Beis HaMikdash.
Really?
Only Yom Kippur?
Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol davened.
They
mean,
had Torahs there, like you have here?
No.
Didn't people come into daven?
If they wanted to, they were able, but they were limited where they can go into. There were different levels of the Beis HaMikdash. There was the Azara, a Jew was able to go into, and then certain parts you were not able to go into, and certain parts nobody was able to go into. But it wasn't a shul where they had minyan for Mincha Maariv.
They didn't do that?
No. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, davening was limited because of Kabban. We daven today instead of Kabbanis. But in those days, a guy had a problem. He could daven. But there was no, so to speak, institution officially of davening Shachris Mincha Maariv.
When the Beis HaMikdash comes back,
we're going to go back to the old style things. They're going to be in karbanas, and the animal rights are going to stand there with banners and protests.
So, what about Shachris and Mincha? We've got to miss each other.
No. Don't, we'll do it anyway.
So, what were they doing when they were buying down and there was room for all of them laying down?
No, it's we say that in the davening. Show your shaman. So people were standing there. They're davening. They think they could do whatever they want. When they heard the name of Hashem coming from the Kohen Gadol, everybody bowed. But it wasn't a formal listening to a chazan there.
So there was no shuls besides the Beis HaMikdash? No shuls like every corner?
No. The time of the Beis HaMikdash, they didn't have what we have today. Yeah, there's places to learn that they had, of course. But nobody went to the Beis HaMikdash to learn. You learned to learn the yeshiva, the Beis HaMikdash, to learn. But davening, they didn't have the official davening we have today, which is instead of kabbanis.
Where was the Sanhedrin, though? Was outside of the Beis HaMikdash.
The Sanhedrin was in, the big Sanhedrin was in the Beis HaMikdash, but the room that they were in did not have the law of the sanctity of the Beis HaMikdash. It was what was called chol. And let's go back to the Gemara. So the Gemara says, you want to liken Maisit to Bchor. The Jussik, there's no Beis HaMikdash today, so you can't eat the Bechor in Yerushalayim. The same thing, there's no Beis HaMikdash today, you can't eat Maiser in Sheni in Yerushalayim also. So Gemara says you can't compare the two. Mal Bechor, you know why a Bechor is different? Because Shekein Tor Matas Domin. In the time of a Bechor was the firstborn animal they brought on the Mizbeach, right? They need to squirt the blood, sprinkle the blood on the Mizbeach. They need to bring the organs on the Mizbeach. But Maisa Sheni, they never needed a Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, you can't say that just like the firstborn animals, there's no Beis HaMikdash, you can't bring it to Yerushalayim. The same thing, Maisa Sheni. He says, how can you compare Maisa Sheni, which is fruit, to an animal which had to be brought as a carbon? Of course today you can't, because you need to sprinkle the blood on the Mizbeach, there's no Beis HaMikdash. You need to burn the fats, the organs on the Mizbeach, there aren't any. So of course he can't bring it to Yerushalayim. But does that mean fruits of Maisa Sheni he can't bring to Yerushalayim because he can't bring a Bechor? So the Gemara says, no, Bikurim Yechich. I can answer, counter your asking about from Bikurim. Why? Because Bikurim basically was also in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Right? And yet the first fruits, they didn't put on the Mizbeach. They didn't sprinkle the blood of the first fruits on the Mizbeach. And yet, there's no Beis HaMikdash. You don't bring Bikurim. You can't eat Bikurim. So the same thing, Ma'aseh Sheni, you can't eat it also, because there's no Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara asks, Ma'ale Bikurim, but Bikurim have a uniqueness that Ma'aseh Sheni doesn't have. What's the uniqueness of Bikurim? Shekein Tu'unim Anocha. You need to put it down in front of the Mizbeach. And there's no Mizbeach today. But Ma'aseh Sheni, you don't need to bring to the Mizbeach. You could eat it anywhere in Yerushalayim. So how are we comparing? In other words, the Gemara is trying to compare Ma'aser to Bechor and Bikurim. Just like when there's no Beis HaMikdash, you can't eat a firstborn animal in Yerushalayim. And you can't eat Bikurim in Yerushalayim. So therefore, you can't eat Ma'aseh Sheni in Yerushalayim. The Gemara says, what's the comparison? Bechor needs a Beis HaMikdash. Ma'aseh Sheni needs Bikurim needs a Beis HaMikdash. So of course, if there's no Beis HaMikdash, you can't bring it. But Ma'aseh doesn't need a Beis HaMikdash, so maybe the din is that even today, you have to bring it to Yerushalayim to eat, instead of redeeming it. So the Gemara answers, you're right. Talmud Leimar, it says in the Pasuk, V'achalta Shom lifnei Hashem alakacha. The Torah says as follows, you'll eat it before Hashem, the mice of your grain, the firstborn of your animals. There's a Pasuk that in the same Pasuk, it connects Bechor, Meiser, Bikurim, it connects everything. So Makish Meiser Lebchor, you see the fact that the Torah in the same Pasuk puts the Dinam of Meiser with the Dinam of Bechor. That means the Torah likens Meiser to Bechor. Ma Bechor Ein Alev Lefnei Abayis, is just like the Din of Bechor could only be eaten in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, af Meiser Ein Alev Lefnei Abayis. The same way, Meiser Sheni can only be eaten if there's a Beis HaMikdash. If there's no Beis HaMikdash, you can't eat it. What do you have to do with it? You have to redeem it. But you're not allowed to take your Meiser Sheni and eat it in Yerushalayim. Just like you can't do it with the firstborn animal. Just like you can't do it with the first fruits. And the Torah likens firstborn animals to Meiser. So if you can't bring a Bechor, you can't bring Meiser either. Okay, that was the Brisa. So now, the Gemara says as follows. V'im Esau, if you're going to tell me that Bikurim need putting down and reading. Remember, Rav Sheshet said a statement, Bikurim, all you have to do is put them down. You don't have to say the Psukim for it to be valid. So he said, V'im Esau, if you're going to hold, that you need not only putting it down, but the reciting of the verses. Lifrach, you can ask a question. Mal Bikurim shekein toin kriv anoch. Bikurim are stricter than Meiser. You want to compare Meiser to Bikurim? You can't. Because Meiser needs bringing to Yerushalayim. Bikurim is stricter. It needs putting it down and reading. The fact that we don't ask that question, the Gemara says, shows that Bikurim does not need to be read. All you have to do is put it down. You know, this is all a Megillah. The Gemara brought down this whole long braisa to prove a point. That by Bikurim, you don't need to read it. All you need is to put it down. And therefore, we're able to learn out Ma'aser from Bikurim. So the Gemara says, but Amir Ravashi asks, Nehi de'ikuv aleko, I understand that it's not, you know, it doesn't make it not kosher. But mitzvah mi'ileko, isn't there a mitzvah to read? He says, what do you mean? You're telling me that Bikurim you only have to put down, you don't have to read? You have to read anyway. I mean, l'chatchila, to do the mitzvah properly, you have to read it. All we're saying is that even if you didn't read it, it's kosher, b'di'avad, after the fact. But l'chatchila, you have to go read it.
Read what?
The psukim of the Chumash. There's a whole thing you say over there in the Chumash, that Lavan wanted to destroy us, and God gave us the land, and thank you for the land, and, you know, we're happy about it, and so on. So the Gemara finishes the question, V'lema mitzvah lifrach. Let the Gemara say, but still, it's a mitzvah to read, even though you don't have to, but it's still a mitzvah to read it. So the Gemara's question is, why don't you mention in the Braisa that Bikurim have to be read? And the fact that the Braisa doesn't seems to imply that the Braisa holds you don't have to read, which is what the Rav Sheshet said. So Rav Ashi says the following. We mentioned this then last week, before when we were just discussing this. Kiven the Ika Bikuri Aged. You know why the Gemara doesn't speak about reading by Bikurim? Because sometimes he can't read. If the guy is a ger, he said you can't see the land that you gave our forefathers. Because his forefathers, who knows where they were? They weren't Jewish. See, they never got the land. So he says, Kiven the Ika Bikuri Aged. They're Bikurim from a ger, a convert to Yiddishkeit. The boy remember that when the reading you're supposed to say Ashenish Bashem Lavisenu, the God's word to give to our forefathers. But the Motzi Omer and the Ger can't say it because his fathers weren't given out to Israel, he wasn't Jewish. The Psikole, we don't want to talk about it. In other words, because it's not an absolute that it's even better to read. In other words, by a regular Jew, mandatory is putting it down. Preferred is also to read. By a ger, you can't read. So the Braisa doesn't want to mention something which is not absolute. The ger could daven shemona esrei, like we said, because when he speaks about Avraham, Yitzchok, and Yaakov, he speaks about Avraham as the father of all converts, of all nations. But when you're speaking about God giving the land to our forefathers, that's a problem. In fact, the same question applies to benching. Mm-hmm. When a ger says, "Al et noyde l'cho," the second bracha talks about the land. Ashichata lavisenu, eres chem de toiv v'chova. So the question is, a ger obligated to bench, but from the Torah, not from the Torah. I mean, he has to bench. The question is, how far does it go? He could buy land, but Yovel, it goes back to the original owners. When people, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, when the system was working, you know, the complete Torah system was working, he never bought land in Israel. It was, I don't know what they call it in English today, it was the Hong Kong deal. You know, you buy land until the Yovel year. Because Yovel, all the land went back to its original owners. It was a ground lease until the Yovel year. So real estate, price of real estate, basically, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, was based on how many years were left to Yovel. That's how much you paid for real estate.
How many years is
Yovel? Every 50 years. But not 50 years from the time you buy it. To give you an example, 2000 is Yovel. So 2050 is Yovel. Right? Let's say. Right? Now, if a guy bought a land in 2010, so he had the land for 40 years. So he would pay $4,000, $100 a year, right? Now, if he bought it though in the year 2025, he only had 25 years still left to Yovel, so he bought it for $2,500. He's not going to pay $4,000 like a guy that has the land for 40 years. So the prices were based on the Yovel system. So if a guy wanted to buy land, he bought land like everybody else until Yovel. But Yovel, it went back to the original tribe that was given the land in Eretz Yisrael.
Depends what tribe
you were. Yeah, no, but the land was divided into 12 parts.
Yeah, but
Levites didn't get.
I know, but in Kia, what tribe is he from?
Nothing.
So what tribe did he buy from? Any tribe?
He could buy from anybody. But then, after Yovel, it goes back to the original owner. With what?
In terms of Gary leaving in Eretz Yisrael and buying land, it's not an
it's the same thing. How does a Jew buy land in Israel today? The laws of Yovel don't apply.
I think there's a law that the government has. It's written in the contracts. After 99 years, it goes back to the country.
Where, in Israel?
I heard. They have a loophole in there to take it away from people after certain years. If they want to. If the government wants to.
Okay, but I'm saying... And nowadays there's no din of Yovel, so today the whole concept doesn't exist.
Right.
So today a Levi is going to Israel, right?
Yeah.
So what happened when Mashiach comes
to Israel? Everything's going to go back to the way it was. The land will be divided up the way it was.
What if you bought an apartment or a house today? Does that enter into all that?
Yeah, nowadays it doesn't matter because the din of Yevul doesn't apply today, period. So it's like anything else you do.
So a lady is going to lose his land at the time the Shia comes?
Everybody's going to lose the land, is going to go back, but don't worry about it. There's going to be so much money around.
No, I'm just saying.
I'll be in the city.
The cities of refuge were given, and 42 cities were given. But not that they owned it, they were given to live in.
Anyway, they'll be taken care of.
When Mashiach comes, everybody will be taken care of. That shouldn't be our concern. Okay, so now the Gemara says, so Valad Adina, but why don't you go back to the Kal Vachomer and Teisa B'Matzad, learn it out from, as he's going to say, from Bechor and Bikurim together. Just as the Bechor and Bikurim share common, they have to be eaten in Yerushalayim only when the temple stood, so Maiser should only be also eaten in Yerushalayim when there's a Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, you can't say that. Why? Because Bikurim and Bechor have something in common with the Beis HaMikdash that Maiser doesn't. Both need a Mizbeach. Bikurim, you have to put the fruit down to by the Mizbeach, and the Bechor, you have to bring on the Mizbeach. Maiser Sheni doesn't. So you can't even learn out Maiser Sheni from Bechor and Bikurim together. Because both of them have a uniqueness that has to do with the Beis HaMikdash, with the Mizbeach, that Maiser doesn't have. So maybe Bikurim and Bechor, because there's no Beis HaMikdash, therefore you're not allowed to eat it in Yerushalayim. But maybe Maiser you could. Maybe there's a leniency for Maiser that you could eat it in Yerushalayim today.
I'm sorry, I thought you already solved that problem. But it said in the pasuk that
But the Gemara's right. The Gemara's question is, why do you need the hekish in the pasuk? We can learn it out from those two things together.
Okay.
Like the original din Torah. Okay, so now the Gemara says, "Amayka Sovar, what does he hold?" Now, before we go into the next piece of Gemara, this is a very, very famous argument, which is a very interesting argument. And that is as follows. When they divided up the land, did that Kedusha stay forever or not? They divided, the Jews entered Eretz Yisrael. 12 tribes entered Eretz Yisrael. In Yeshua's time, he divided up the land for 12 tribes. Does the sanctity of the land remain forever, even if the Jews were not there? And don't say yes so far. And does the din of the Beis HaMikdash place have the same kedusha forever? Meaning, do all the laws? And by the way, the two are two separate cases. Okay, let me. The question is actually divided into two distinct questions. In regard to the sanctity of the land of Israel, and in regard to the sanctity of the temple site. Meaning, is initial sanctity sanctified for its time and all future times, or not? And he says, I'm going to read it because he explains it very well and it's very basic. In regard to the sanctity of the land of Israel, this question relates to whether the laws dependent on the land of Eretz Yisrael, Truma, Maaser, which came into effect when the Jews originally took possession of Eretz Yisrael, remain biblically applicable in Eretz Yisrael even after the nation has been exiled from the land. In other words, today, do the laws of Terumah and Maaser apply in Israel? No. So, if you say that the first Kedusha remained forever, that means whether you're there or not, it doesn't matter, the laws of Kedusha remain. In regard to the sanctity of the temple site, the question relates whether the temple site in Yerushalayim retains the sanctity even after the temple is destroyed. That is, do the various laws of offerings that apply only at the temple site remain in force during the period of the temple's destruction? And the Gemara is going to discuss later, can you bring a carbon even though there's no Beis HaMikdash? Now, the two questions are not interdependent. For example, one could hold that the requirement to separate Trumas and Maasers might still be biblically enforced today, because the land sanctity remains. But the Maaser Sheni, which is separated, cannot be eaten in Yerushalayim, because the sanctity of the temple is not there. And that's what the Gemara is going to be discussing. Meaning as follows. You could say that Eretz Yisrael is holy, and therefore you have to bring Meiser. But eating it in Yerushalayim might be dependent on the temple. And the temple might not have the same sanctity that it had. In other words, there's no question Eretz Yisrael is holy. The land is holy today. There's no question that the Beis HaMikdash site is holy. The question is, do the dinim of the temple apply today, even though there's no temple? Which means, you can't bring a carbon, obviously, because there's no Beis HaMikdash. Besides the fact we're all Tomei and, you know, whatever. We can't do it. But those laws that are dependent on the temple, those laws remain today or not? Which means, if eating Meiser in Yerushalayim is dependent on the temple, so if the original Kedusha remains, then you have to eat Meiser in Yerushalayim. If the sanctity of the temple does not remain, because the temple is destroyed, so that law of sanctity as far as dinim go doesn't apply, so then you can't eat Meiser Shein in Yerushalayim. And that's what the Gemara is going to be discussing now.
Do you want an answer to your question?
You can answer it?
Well,
I don't think you're going
to
be able to.
I just don't know enough about this to answer it.
That's good. We'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Okay, so now the Gemara asks a question. Micah Savar, what does he hold? It's like 10, 11 lines from the bottom of the page. Micah Savar, what does it Rabbi Shmuel hold? Ika Savar, if he holds, that Kedusha Rishayna Kitcha L'Shaita, that the first Kedusha remains, was holy in its time. V'Kitcha L'Asad Lavei, and the Kedusha remains forever. Afila b'char nami, then even a b'char could be eaten in Yerushalayim. So Taisa says, what does it mean? If a guy made a mizbeach and squirted the blood on the mizbeach.
On sight?
Yeah. Do you know, it's interesting, right after the Six-Day War, right after the Mechamah Sheshet Yom, when we got back to Yerushalayim, and the Jews had total control over Yerushalayim, the Rebbe gave out a thing that nobody should be in the old city of Yerushalayim Erev Pesach after midday. Why? Because, it's basically not this Gemara, because this is not the source of this Gemara. But the issue is, because if you hold that the Kedush of the Beis HaMikdash still exists, a Jew might have an obligation to bring a Korban Pesach. And if you have an obligation to bring a Korban Pesach, you can't be in the city because you're going to have an obligation that you're not going to be able to fulfill. So by being out of Yerushalayim, you're Bederech Rechayka, if you're far away, then you don't have an obligation to bring a Korban Pesach. No, so the Rebbe said, even though there's no Beis HaMikdash because there's a Shita of Rebbe Chil mi Parish, that you can bring technically korbanos today, even though there's no Beis HaMikdash. Because there's a whole question, if the Kedush of the Beis HaMikdash remains, it's possible that you don't even need a Beis HaMikdash. You can build a Mizbeach and do a korban. Like Jesus says over here, Tzarech Leimed the Mighty, Asa Mizbeach, V'Zarek Din, because if the Kedush of Beis HaMikdash doesn't matter, it doesn't matter. Taisa says it's possible a guy would build a mizbeach and be able to do it.
Should it be on the side of the Beis HaMikdash?
Well, in there. I don't know exactly where.
Or in the city.
I don't know. I don't know.
No.
He says, he quotes from Taisa, by the way. If an altar was constructed and the Bechor offering was properly sacrificed, according to the view that the Kedusha remains, right, and the building of the Beis HaMikdash is not essential for Karbonis, that means you could technically bring a carbon even without a Beis HaMikdash if you had the proper Mizbeach. So what happens if the guy did? Then you can eat it in your Shalayim even today, the Bukhar. If you hold, though, that the first Kedusha did not remain, that means there's no Beis HaMikdash, all of the stuff falls off, then Meiser also, why do you have to think you can eat in your Shalayim? What?
Well,
So if that's the case, then why was it so such a big deal in making times pass when to build a Obama or to build a, what do they call that, Mizbeach, and to make sacrifices outside the Beit HaMikdash?
No, during the time the Beit HaMikdash was forbidden to do anything outside the Beit HaMikdash.
I don't know, but wasn't it even if the Beit HaMikdash wasn't in existence?
No, but if you built it in the Makom of the Mikdash, that's technically. If somebody did it.
So when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, were they allowed to build
I don't know if they were allowed. I don't know. I don't know if they were allowed to or not, but if somebody did, he built it.
And was it also?
No, I don't think so. Here, he says, in practice, however, he just says, the problems of tumah, contamination, and uncertainty to the exact location of the Mizbeach site prevent any sacrifice from being offered nowadays anyway. So nowadays it doesn't apply. But you still might have a chiyuv by the Korban Pesach to do it anyway. Not that you could bring the Korban Pesach, but you have an obligation to bring it. You just don't know where, but if you have an obligation to bring it, you have a problem. Right.
But
the tumah hutter b'tzibur. If the whole tzibur is tamei, so then the laws of tumah don't apply. So then it's a whole different concept again. Then the Rebbe said later that based on what happened, giving back land or whatever, it lost that status anyway. So today it doesn't matter. So Gemara says, what does he hold? What does Rebbe Shmuel hold? If he holds the kedusha rishayin, the kid shel shaita was sanctified for its time, and kid shel asad lavi, the kedusha remains forever. So I feel a b'char nami. If a b'char offering technically could also be eaten in the base of Mikdash. But if he holds kedusha rishayna kitchel shaita v'loy kitchel asid lavei, and it cannot be, the kedusha doesn't remain. So the question is, why does Rabbi Shmuel only ask about ma'aser? Why doesn't he ask about a b'char? If you have a firstborn animal. So you can't bring a carbon because you don't have a base of Mikdash. The question is, does it stay or not? So he says as follows. Sometimes the Gemara comes up with doozer scenarios. We'll see it inside. Amar Avina says, really he holds the Kedusha L'Shaita V'Lei Kitcha L'Asadavik, which is, by the way, the Halacha, that the Kedusha Rishayna did not remain forever. Only as long as the Beis HaMikdash stood. But what's the case over here? It's speaking as follows. A guy brought a b'char to the Beis HaMikdash, it was standing. They squirted the blood on the Mizbeach, and then the Beis HaMikdash became destroyed. Can he eat the b'char in Yerushalayim or not? In other words, the guy sacrificed the b'char while the Beis HaMikdash was standing. And he sprinkled the blood on the Mizbeach while the Beis HaMikdash was standing. Then the Beis HaMikdash became destroyed, and he didn't have a chance to eat it. So now there's no Beis HaMikdash. Can he eat it in a Yerushalayim or not?
Why not?
Why not? Because right now, when the Tam comes to eat it, there's no Beis HaMikdash.
Well, how long does it keep it there? Yeah, but the other did what?
Oh, so that's the question. Do we say that because he squirted the blood, sprinkled the blood on the Mizbeach, said it's good, and therefore it's just an ending of the carbon so he can eat it? Or do we say no? Now comes eating. Eating, you can only eat if there's a Beis HaMikdash. Right now, there's no Beis HaMikdash, so you can't eat it.
But how long did they sacrifice that thing for?
Well, according to this Gemara, it means 2 seconds before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the guy sprinkled the blood on the Mizbeach, because the Beis HaMikdash burned for 2 days. A day and a half. They lit it, Tisha B'Av in the afternoon.
It was a hypothetical question.
Right. But the Gemara says this a lot of times like that. It's almost an impossible scenario. Because the Beis HaMikdash burnt for a day and a half.
But it's trying to prove a point here.
Right. Right.
They should be able to eat it outside Beit HaMikdash.
Correct. That's what he says. It's speaking B'char Shenizrek Dame Kedem Churban Rabbayis. The blood was sprinkled before the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash. V'char Rabbayis, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. V'adayim B'sori Kayim. And the meat is still there, meaning the Kayim didn't eat the meat yet. So the question is, do we liken the meat to the blood? Meaning, if the blood was kosher, because it was sprinkled on the Mizbeach, so now the meat can be eaten. Or do we say no? Do we say, Madame b'mizbeach, just like the blood is conditioned that there's a Mizbeach, Av besari l'mizbeach, the same thing, the meat is similar, must have a Mizbeach, and therefore there's no Mizbeach, so you can't eat the meat. And therefore we take a step further, we liken Maisit to Bchor, and we liken Maisit to Bchor, which means as follows. Bchor, we learn out that you can't do it. You can't eat it in Yerushalayim, even if you sprinkled the blood before the destruction, but now when it comes to eating, there's no Beis HaMikdash, you can't eat it. So we liken Maisit to Bchor. And therefore, just like by Bchor, you can't eat it if there's no Beis HaMikdash. Maisa, you can't eat in Yerushalayim also if there's no Beis HaMikdash. Okay? But the Gemara asks, there's a problem with this. V'chidavar alamid behekish, something which is learned out from a comparison. Can you learn out chayzum alamid behekish? Meaning as follows. Torah has strange laws when it comes to Kabbanis. It means as follows. Something you learn out from comparison, when it comes to Kabbanis, cannot be compared to something which is a non-carbon. Now, we're learning out the meat of the Bechor from the blood of the Bechor. Just like the blood needs a Mizbeach, in order to eat the meat, you need a Mizbeach. And then we say, we liken Meiser, which is fruit, not a carbon, Meiser to Bechor. So the Gemara said, but there's a rule by Hekdish, there's a rule in the Beis HaMikdash, that something which is likened from a Hekish cannot learn something else from the Hekish if it's not by Korbanus. By a law which is self-derived from a comparison cannot be further extended by Korbanus to another comparison. So therefore, if we're learning out meat from blood, you can't learn out fruit from meat.
Even though they're both sacrifices.
Mice is not a sacrifice.
It's offering.
No, mice is sheni, you eat. Mice is sheni, is not a carbon. But still, you like eating carbonis, so you like eating three stages over here. The blood must have a mizbeach that we know, to sprinkle the blood. You have no mizbeach, you can't sprinkle the blood on the mizbeach. We're likening eating the meat to the sprinkling of the blood that you must have a mizbeach. Now we're taking a step further, the jalsik, the meat of the carbon must have a mizbeach, so fruit of maaser also needs mizbeach. So the Gemara says you can't do that. The Gemara asks, maaser dagan chulunu. So the Gemara answers, the question was, how do you do it? So the Gemara answers, but maaser dagan is not a carbon. Maaser is not a carbon, so you could learn it out from a double comparison. Only sacrifices you can't learn out from a double comparison. But something which is not, you could. So the Gemara says, next page, that's only according to the opinion that says, Basalamad Azlinan, we go, which the law that we derive, not what you derive it from. In other words, as follows. When you compare A to B, right? Which has to be the carbon, B or A? We learn out Bechor. Blood is clear. We learn out meat from blood. That way you want to learn out from meat to non-carbon Meiser. Now when you say by sacrifices, you can't learn a double comparison. What part of it is the sacrifice? The derived thing or the thing you're learning it from? Maaser is not a carbon, but meat is, and the blood is.
If the lesser importance applies, then definitely there is
one. Yeah, but the dinner by a carbon, you can only have one comparison, not a double comparison. So the Gemara answers, Maaser is not a carbon, right? But the Gemara answers, are you looking at the thing ultimately derived Maaser, or are you looking at the thing you derive it from, which is a carbon. Meaning, when you can't have a double comparison by a carbon, does it mean the thing you learn it out from, or the thing you learn out? And there's two opinions. So if you say you can't learn out a carbon, double comparison, if the thing that you're deriving is not a carbon, then it doesn't matter. Then you could have a double comparison. Or do we say, no, it's not the thing you learn out, it's the thing you learn it out from. And if that's a carbon, you can't have a double comparison. No, it's not. It's very simple. It's not. You have blood, meat, fruit. Okay?
Right.
You're comparing meat to blood,
right.
Fruit to meat.
Right.
Now, the first two, blood and meat, are carbon.
Right.
Okay? Now, the Gemara's question was, how could you learn blood from meat from blood I got?
Right.
It's a comparison. But how do you learn out a double comparison, fruit from meat? Right. So the Gemara answers, because the fruit is not a carbon. And if it's non-carbon, you could learn out a double comparison. Correct? The problem is that A, B, C, B is a carbon. When you say you can't learn out a double comparison by a carbon, meaning A, B, C, which would be a double comparison, B to A and C to B. Now, you say a rule, by a carbon you can't learn out a double comparison. Does that mean C? Or if B is a carbon, you can't learn out C even if it's not a carbon? Because B is still a carbon. Is it the student or the teacher? B is learned from A, and now B is teaching C. So when you say you can't have a double learning by a carbon, does it mean C, if it's not a carbon, is okay? Or do we say, no, even if B is a carbon, the teacher, you also can't learn it out? How does it work? Because if C is not a carbon and it doesn't matter, so then it's fine. You can learn out Meiser from meat, and meat is learned from blood. But if you're saying it matters if B is the double, because B learned, B was learned from A, and now B wants to teach C. So B is already in a double point by itself. B is learned and teaching. So the question is, if B itself is a carbon, one opinion says, then B can't teach C, even though C is not a carbon. Because it's a double learning. And B is a carbon, you can't do it.
Is C blood?
C is a fruit, it's Meiser.
Oh, I thought you said C was a carbon.
No. A is the blood of Bukhar. B is the meat of the Bukhar. C is the fruits of Meiser. What are we learning? If blood needs a Mizbeach, then meat needs a Mizbeach. And if meat needs a Mizbeach, fruit needs a Mizbeach. Okay? So B, the middle guy, is learned from A and is teaching C. It's a double learning. Now there's a rule, you can't learn a double ruling when it comes to carbon. Does that mean B cannot be used twice if it's a carbon? Even if C isn't? Or can, as long as C is not a carbon, B could be used twice? That's the rule. Because karbanos are so unique, you can't liken double likenings. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Karbanos are holy, they're unique. They have their own guidelines. Okay? The Torah says you can liken A to B and B to A, but you can't mix in a third component here, C. Okay? Yet the way we're learning in the Gemara is trying to say a statement that Meiser Sheni, you can't eat in Yerushalayim today if there's no Beis HaMikdash. Where do we learn it out from? From the meat of a Bechor. But where do we know the meat of the Bukhar from? From the blood of the Bukhar. Right? So it's a double learning. Which by a carbon you can't do. Now, the Gemara says, but see, the fruit is really not a carbon. So Gemara says, yes. But according to one opinion, if B is a carbon, and B is being used to learn and to teach, then you can't do it anyway. So then you couldn't learn out that Ma'aseh Sheni, you can't eat in your Shalayim from Chor. Because you can't learn out a double comparison and a double learning. And that's because of the uniqueness of a carbon. Carbonus is so unique. What the Torah says, and that's it. You can start, you know, comparing things because every carbon has a different concept. Different laws, different applications, different everything.
Could that be subject to change?
No.
This is forever?
Forever.
It's a shame.
And everything else in Torah is forever.
It's a shame that this is for, you know, food, fruit, meat, this, A, B, C. I mean, why make it so difficult for the Jewish people? You're a rabbi.
Good
you should question. Have concern Good. For the Jewish people.
I'm very concerned.
This doesn't bother you?
No, it bothers me more how the cholent tastes in Shabbos.
What?
How the cholent tastes in Shabbos concerns me more.
Oh, well.
So if you can't use it to teach,
I just want to say the Gemara's answer, because the Gemara's answer is very simple. One second. The Gemara's going to answer, you know why I couldn't learn out? The Gemara says, because meat and blood are not two separate things. It's one thing. So if blood and meat are one, you're just learning out fruit from them. That's it. We thought blood is one thing, and meat is something else, and the fruit is a third thing. So the Gemara says, you can't have two comparisons, only one. So the Gemara says, you know what? That's not the point. Meat and blood are one. It's the Bukhar. It's one carbon. So we're learning out Maise from Bukhar. So it's one comparison, not two. That's the Gemara's answer.
So can we learn it
now? Yeah.
Because
you can't eat in your Shalayim. No. And that's the halacha today, by the way. What do you do today in Eretz Yisrael? Because the Kedusha of the land remains as far as Trumas, Maises, and all that. So the din is, at least rabbinically, according to many opinions, but whatever, what you have to do is redeem it for a penny, whatever, pruta, and then you're allowed to eat it because it's redeemed, it loses the sanctity, it becomes everyday mundane stuff, and then what do you do with it? Like it says, what do? You throw it out.
But if the fruit is other than Yerushalayim, you redeem it in Yerushalayim?
If the fruit, they didn't grow fruit in Yerushalayim.
What else did they do?
One sec, what did they do? It says, no, what they did is, they redeemed it. They redeem it and then they discard the thing.
You said that an hour ago.
I know. I'm saying it again.
Then they put it in a certain place.
I will give you another week to find the answer.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Come here next week.
No, it says.
Why?
No, what? One second. Oh, yeah, this is what I'm looking for. Rather, the Ma'aseh Sheni is redeemed for a fraction of its value when eaten as ordinary food, and the redemption money is disposed of. You throw it out, whatever, get rid of it.